Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool deal. So both the incoming Montana State Senate President, Matt Regeer out of Kalispell, and incoming Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear. I understand all the legislators will be sworn in on Monday, along with our statewide office holders, those elected for the first time to a new position or re-elected here in the 2024 November elections. Anyway, let me get to that first here. Governor and First Lady Gianforte are inviting all Montanans to the state capitol for the inaugural ceremonies of the state of Montana on Monday, January 6th. So coming up this Monday, January 6th, 2025, that's when they will be swearing in all of the statewide office holders: Governor Greg Gianforte, Lieutenant Governor Kristen Juris, Attorney General Austin Knutson, Secretary of State Christy Jacobson, State Auditor-elect Jim Brown, and Superintendent-elect Susie Hedlund, all taking the oath of office, and all Republicans for all of those positions. The event is scheduled to take place on the front steps of the state capitol, with the ceremony set to begin at 10:30 Monday morning. Governor Gianforte saying, quote, "As we ring in the new year and four more years of strong leadership in Helena, I invite all Montanans to attend the inaugural ceremonies of the state of Montana. I hope families are able to join us in Helena to be a part of this special day in history." But yeah, incoming Senate President Matt Regeer and incoming Speaker of the House Brandon Lear will be officially sworn in along with the rest of the state legislators on Monday as well. But this is really cool. They are giving their message straight to the people of Montana. They've started, it's called the Montana Majority Report podcast. I think I just listened to a bit of it this morning, their first little segment on Spotify earlier this morning. And we'll have access to those reports to share with you on the radio. And then we'll probably do during the legislative session last session when Matt Regeer was Speaker of the House. He would join us once a week and give an update on here's what happened this week in the Montana legislature. It was a nice way to run through the big stories of the week because there's so much going on. Or he would preview the week ahead. And so we look forward to doing something like that again here this January through May, roughly, of this Montana legislative session here in January 2025. But, yeah, they started this Montana Majority Report podcast. And I think it's great that they're doing this because – you are going to see more. I think this may be, it'd be interesting to find out. I think this may be the most so-called reporters, I say so-called, ever covering the Montana legislature this spring, this legislative session. But look, you and I all know how this is going to go. Oh, so the Republicans have full control in Helena now. So now you hire all these reporters. Remember when the Democrats were in charge and they started firing all their Capitol Bureau reporters? Ah, nothing to see here, folks. Just let the Democrats do whatever they want. Oh, but now the Republicans have, you know, total control of the legislature and the statewide offices in Helena. Oh, yeah, let's send all these reporters. Let's sick all these reporters on the Republicans. And they're going to be sitting there, most of them are going to be trotting out the Democrat Party talking points and looking for every way to attack and criticize the Republicans in the legislature, but then giving the Democrats a pass on all their craziness and some of their crazy bill ideas. So that's why I love the fact that the Speaker and the Senate President are getting their message straight to the people of Montana.
Securing America.
250 mayors, police chiefs, and governors now on notice. They face federal prosecution if they interfere with President Trump's mass deportation plan. A letter from America First Legal, which has strong ties to Trump policymakers, say it is a crime for local officials to conceal or shield migrants from federal agents. The letter targets leaders in so-called sanctuary jurisdictions. In recent weeks, many have said they'll refuse to cooperate with federal efforts to ramp up deportation of criminal migrants. That's not going over well with incoming border czar Tom Homan.
If you don't want to protect your communities, shame on you. But we're going to do it for you. You're not going to stop me. We're coming.
Federal law says if you're here illegally, you're deportable, crime or not. Congress, through the 1986 Immigration Control Act, requires criminal aliens be deported, quote, as soon as possible after their conviction. William Lajeunesse, Fox News.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlider in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we've got Joy Churchill from the Gianforte Family Foundation joining us in a few minutes. Jeremy Carl, senior fellow with the Claremont Institute. We're going to be talking about the inbound Trump administration, how the Trump transition is going, some other top lines with Jeremy. Yeah, of course, he's with the Claremont Institute, but lives in Bozeman, Montana. Always great to catch up with Jeremy Carl. He's going to join us. And then later on in the 9 o'clock hour, Gary Marbit with the Montana Shooting Sports Association is going to preview the legislative session. And then Cameron Moylan out of Butte. You're going to want to listen to that one for sure. It's going to be very interesting insight there. Let's see. And then I want to talk about some of my top 10 Montana stories for 2024 based on your views. There's some interesting ones specifically that made the top 10 list just from our MontanaTalks.com website alone. And then we've got a top 10 list based off of views of several different websites across Montana. So anyway, we'll get to that. But first, here is Senate President-elect Matt Regeer out of Kalispell talking about their Montana Majority Report podcast that they are going to be producing content for throughout the upcoming legislative session here in Montana.
And now it relies on our shoulders. And it's like, why not? We are closest to the people. I mean, we're the legislative branch. Why not give them a direct look at in the halls of the Capitol and speak directly to people, not just in Miles City, but all the people in Montana?
Yeah, right from the source. Something you don't always get at the federal level. And this is where stuff happens. This is where change happens. It's the state. And you get access to the people who are doing it. So I'm very excited for the Montana Majority Report.
This is going to be a format of like 10 to 12 minutes we're going to have on download the podcast.
News
it's going to be hard-hitting. It's going to be quick. We're going to jam-pack all the information just into a short time so you don't have to sit there and wade through it. It's going to be informative, and it's going to be directly from the source, as you said, Mr. Pro Tem. We're giving you a look right into the halls of the Capitol. We're going to have people from the House. We're going to have people from the Senate. You're going to be the first to know downloading this podcast.
This is going to be such.
All right, there you go. That was State Senator Ken Bogner, who is the Senate Pro Tem there, joining President-elect Matt Regeer there as well. But no, I think it's great that they're doing this in. Because, look, you guys saw how biased the media coverage was. I think that truly was the big story of 2024 here in Montana, was just how shamefully biased the Montana media was. I mean, one of the biggest stories, of course, was the toppling of longtime Democrat Senator John Tester by Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy. Tim Sheehy, I understand, will be sworn in tomorrow. I think that's when the new Senate and the new House members will be sworn in, is tomorrow, January 3rd. I think that was the big story there. Jed Link kind of shared that on X as well, which was just how shamefully biased the Montana media has been against the Republicans, against conservatives, against, I would even add, small business owners, against business in general. But constantly propping up big government, constantly propping up radical environmental groups, constantly propping up the Democrats. And we're going to see that on display once again. We know it's going to happen in this upcoming legislative session. These media outlets are bragging, oh, look at all these people we're going to have covering the Capitol. No, you're going to be covering for the Democrats, and you're going to be looking for every way possible to undermine we the people. So it's so great that these guys are getting their message straight out to the people of Montana. And that's what President Trump did and was able to do. He took his message straight to the American people with the majority of the media against him and constantly undermining him, and the bureaucracy constantly trying to undermine him, and the lawfare that was waged against him. We now have more tools at our fingertips, at our disposal, to get the message straight out to the people. Talk radio platforms like this, podcasts, tweets on X, everything. And the beauty is more and more people are using these resources and using these tools now as well. And on top of that, they saw firsthand how biased and how bad the media was against Tim Sheehy in the Senate race, and yet Tim Sheehy still won a massive victory. What was it, 7 or 8 points over a longtime politician? An incumbent that had way more money spent on his behalf. Almost $200 million was spent on his behalf and spent against Tim Sheehy and attacking Tim Sheehy. And yet they lost. And when I say they, I don't just mean the Democrats. I mean they, the media, lost because people don't trust you. They don't believe you. And they know that you are in the bag for the Democrats. And so, folks, you just got to understand that they are going to be up to their same old tricks with the upcoming legislative session. All right, real quick, you know, I mentioned how I think that truly was, you know, the big story of 2024 was the media bias just on full display here in Montana, and how the people of Montana just don't even believe them, don't even trust them anymore. Not just, you know, not just the liberal-leaning newspapers, but the TV stations and more. But here's what's interesting. If you go to MontanaTalks.com, especially our listeners in the Flathead Valley, you will notice that in our top 10 list of the stories that I wrote for 2024, based off of your views, based off of the local page views of Montanans, the number one story for 2024, the story that people clicked on the most, illegal aliens reportedly dumped in Montana's Flathead Valley. And then another story, number two, is about the violent Venezuelan gang Trende Aragua in Montana. The number four story was also the crazy new details about the illegal aliens that were dumped in Kalispell. But when I pulled the top 10 list just from our MontanaTalks.com website, of course, the wide open southern border and the illegal aliens constantly made the top 10 list. But another headline that made the top 10: look at the beautiful, clean sky above Colstrip, Montana. That was another story that made the top 10 list as well.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Let's think outside the box for a minute about the future of transportation. 40,000 people die in vehicle crashes every year. Suppose we could cut that drastically. How? Driverless cars. Imagine for one moment a world where crashes were avoided. What would that mean? It would mean that we could have different kinds of vehicles, smaller, lighter, more efficient, cheaper, more aerodynamic. We don't need airbags and huge bumpers, lower fuel costs and lower insurance rates. The cheapest ones might be repaired the way we fix computers today, by replacing them with new ones. Lighter vehicles would call us less wear and tear on roads. We could use the same roads, garages, and parking lots we have today, but they could serve a lot more volume. Is this really so far-fetched? There are plenty of details to be worked out, like how we move things like freight and big families. Things like buses and commuter trains might become dinosaurs, but getting people to accept it might be easier than you think, especially if it costs a fraction of what we pay today. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
This is House Call for Health. January is Glaucoma Awareness Month. The National Eye Institute says the disease can cause vision loss and blindness, which can't be reversed. What happens is that fluid in the eyes builds up, which then increases pressure and damages the optic nerve. The optic nerve transfers visual images to your brain. It is possible to save your vision or prevent further vision loss with early detection and treatment. But unfortunately, there are no early symptoms or warning signs. There's no pain or discomfort or blurry vision. And that's why regularly scheduled eye and vision checkups are important. During the checks, an eye care professional will place drops in your eyes to widen the pupils and check the optic nerve for signs of glaucoma. 3 million Americans have it and half don't know it. Those at higher risk are African Americans over 40 years old and adults in general over 60. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News. Wesley.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, before we get to our next guest here on Montana Talks, let me share a couple of quick messages that came in on the Montana Talks app. Lori in Billings, I was talking about the legislators being sworn in and all our statewide office holders being sworn in. Here kicking off the new year, that will take place on Monday for our statewide office holders in the Montana legislature. And then, of course, newly elected Senator Tim Sheehy, Congressman-elect Troy Downing, and as well as existing Senator Steve Daines and Congressman Zinke will be sworn in tomorrow, as I understand it. But when it comes to the swearing-in ceremonies, Lori in Billings says this: why are these senators and reps sworn in as a group? Who knows if they really spoke the oath? Shouldn't they be televised and sworn in one by one so we, the people, can have proof they really made the oath of office and more easily hold them accountable? Yeah, we have some lip readers there, some people just mouthing the words instead of saying it. Lori, thanks for that message. She also says this about the biased media here in Montana. If people were half smart, they wouldn't listen to the liberal, woke, lying news stations and papers. They'd go broke and go away. Lori, thanks for the messages. Well, let's switch tracks now. We've great to have Joy Churchill on the program with us. Joy is the program director for the Gianforte Family Foundation. And I know a lot of people, when it comes to the end of the year, you start to look at your year-end giving and what are some great programs that you can donate your money to, et cetera. And then some people are saying, well, hey, let's figure out a plan for the year ahead. What are some good organizations out there to donate your money and your time to here in Montana? Joy Churchill with the Gianforte Family Foundation, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
Yeah, so this was a record-breaking giving year for the Gianforte Family Foundation, which was, of course, started by now Governor Greg Gianforte and his wife Susan. They started this back in 2004, but a record-breaking year this past year.
That's right. We had about a little over $11 million go out this year. This is the third year in a row that we have distributed more than $10 million in a year. And this particular year, 94% of the $11 million went to Montana causes.
Yeah, and how cool is it for you? I understand you actually worked for Right Now Technologies in Bozeman, the company that was known as Right Now Technologies that was founded by Greg and Susan Gianforte. So you got to see that company basically kind of get started and then blow up into the huge success that it became. And now you're able to, basically take part in giving out a lot of that success to support some Montana charities. What's it like for you just on a personal level to be a part of that?
Well, Right Now Technologies was a huge part of my life and my husband's life. We both worked there. My husband was at Right Now Technologies and Oracle for about 20 years, so it sustained our family. We moved here to work for Right Now Technologies and have been just blessed by the work and the people that we've got to interact with.
It was so cool. The governor did this 12 days of giving, I think it was, before Christmas, and each day would either show support for or donate money and highlight a different charity here in the state. And one day I was out on vacation, but I'm on the National Advisory Board for Warriors in Quiet Waters, which is based there in the Gallatin Valley, and but serves warriors from all across America. But it was so cool. He actually donated part of his governor's salary to Warriors in Quiet Waters, and then throughout those days had announced others that would benefit from him donating his salary as well. What are some of the organizations out there that your foundation is supporting? And I guess tell us a little bit about why you wanted to support those organizations as well.
Well, that's a great question. We have a lot of different strategies. Each staff person with the Jean Forte Family Foundation has a different portfolio. And Catherine Conan, who is our executive director, she focuses on education. And some of the grants that she has particularly worked on this year have been through the Jean Forte Trades Scholarships and $490,000 in scholarships have gone out this year. She's also worked with Montana's Chamber Youth Entrepreneurs, which is now called Youth and is now called Empowered, and $368,000 were distributed to that program, which allowed about 100 high school teachers to teach youth about entrepreneurship and business.
You know, it's amazing. I don't think most Montanans understand how much Governor and First Lady Susan Gianforte, how much they are actually doing to support all of these various programs across Montana. I mean, we might read in the news about what's going on in the state capitol and what's being done in the legislature and the bills that are signed into law. But when it comes to, like, supporting trades education or supporting, you know, school freedom, school choice, or supporting some of these, you know, pregnancy clinics that help young women that are in need, that are pregnant, I mean, I could throw a football from our radio studios here in downtown Billings and probably hit three or six different buildings that have organizations that are supported by the Gianforte Family Foundation. A lot of Montanans don't know that.
Yeah. And one of our strategies is to fund complementary services in a community instead of services that compete against one another, so that multiple organizations within a community can lean on each other's strengths. For example, ChildBridge is across the state and helps train foster parents and gives them support emotionally and educationally. But then we have Promise 686, which also supports foster families, but in a different way. They provide material goods through the local churches. And so as we think about how we fund organizations, not one organization has to do it all, but we want to provide stepping stones of care across the state.
Yeah, and it looks like since they founded this organization back in 2004, some 20 years ago, they've already the foundation has provided about $100 million, almost $100 million to different Montana grant partners all across the state. You know, one example in particular that stood out to me here was, of course, as governor, you know, Governor Gianforte is a big supporter of trades education and technology education, but he's not just supporting it as governor and getting actual programs in place, whether it's in support of apprenticeships through the Department of Labor or through, you know, education initiatives in our public schools, but he's also supporting trades and technology scholarships as well. I mean, that's just one example.
Yeah, the foundation is really dedicated to the economic flourishing of Montanans and the spiritual flourishing of Montanans. And so as we consider grants, we want to see Montanans step into the abilities and skills they have because it helps them individually, helps support their families, but it also helps support the economy of Montana.
If there's somebody listening right now that has an organization or a nonprofit that, you know, they're always so heavily reliant on fundraising and volunteers and, you know, donations, what are you looking for? How can they apply for these grant opportunities? And, yeah, what are you looking to fund in particular?
Well, I always encourage people to reach out to us because sometimes it doesn't necessarily look like it's a fit, but having a conversation with us can help discern whether or not it's a good fit. We have a couple different strategies that we've already talked about. We focus on trades education, youth entrepreneurship. But when we look at social services, we often, not always, but often fund Christian social services in the areas of those that are unhoused and looking for stable housing. We focus on, you mentioned, pregnancy centers across the state. We even, there's a group in Billings called Love and Sunshine, and they provide housing and support to teen, pregnant, or parenting mothers who don't have stable housing. So Christian social services education, entrepreneurship, as well as work that my coworker Tim Gardepi does in Native communities across the state.
All right. Well, and yeah, you can go to gianfortefoundation.org for more information. One thing I've encouraged folks, I've actually had people reach out to me saying, hey, you know, we want to give to a good cause here in Montana, or hey, you know, we have a church that's looking to support other organizations. Who do you recommend? And I say, you know what, I'm honest when I say this. I'm like, you know, to be honest, because the hardest thing for a lot of people is, okay, who do you give your money? Which organizations do you support? And have they been vetted? Do you know that you're giving your money to something that isn't just a good idea, but they're actually successful at doing what they're doing? There's accountability in it. And so I say, what I've told people is, hey, I would go look at what the Gianforte Family Foundation is doing. And, you know, you can pick from a list right there because they do the vetting. They want to support programs that work here in Montana, and especially faith-based programs in particular. Joy Churchill, thanks for your time. Great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you so much, Aaron. I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for being with us. Let's see. Coming up here after the next break, we've got Jeremy Carl, a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, on with us. So we're going to talk about all the big debates that you might have missed or might have heard a little bit about over the holidays between Christmas and New Year's, the H-1B visa debate that seemed to divide Trump supporters over the holidays. And then how is the Trump transition going? We're going to talk with Jeremy Carl about that and more. You know, I mentioned it's interesting as we talk about the Gianforte Family Foundation and all the work that they're doing. When I went back and looked at the top 10 stories of 2024, just from the MontanaTalks.com website alone, two of the stories that were on the top 10 list were news from Governor Greg Gianforte. So these stories are the top 10 based off of your views. One was the governor celebrating the news about White Sulphur Springs and the proposed copper mine there. And the advancements on that front in 2024. The other story that got a lot of clicks, a lot of views across Montana, was the big news announced by Governor Gianforte about Brixtal Defense opening up that ammo manufacturing facility in Glendive last year as well. So that was two of the stories on our top 10 list. All right, back right after this.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's go inside the mind of a 10-year-old.
I should have worn those earrings today. I like those earrings. Gabby has those awesome earrings. I need to ask her where she got those, but that's just what she would want me to do. I'll have Michaela ask her for me.
Buckle up, Sarah.
Yeah, but then Michaela will be like, why don't you just ask her yourself? That's just like Michaela.
Sarah, buckle up.
Michaela's such a great name. I wish I was called Michaela. There's like a dozen Sarahs in my class.
Hey, we're not hitting the road until you buckle up, honey.
Oh yeah, seatbelt. I forget sometimes because my brain is, like, busy, you know? I wonder if there's pizza at school today.
Sometimes it can be tough to get through to your kids, but it's not impossible. Always make sure they're wearing their seatbelts, even on short drives. Remember, you have the keys, you have the power. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. Visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup for more information.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into it. We've got our friend Jeremy Carl, a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, back with us on the show. Jeremy, Happy New Year. Thanks for being back with us. I think we caught up with you before Christmas, kind of talking Trump transition and more.
Yeah, absolutely, Aaron. It's a pleasure to be on, pleasure to talk.
Well, a lot more to talk about here this morning following just the tragic news that we see coming out of New Orleans with this New Year's Day terror attack. I want to talk more about that here a little bit later in the program. Sam Faddis, a former CIA operations officer, I think he summed it up the best with his AND magazine website. He calls it First Blood, terror in New Orleans. But, you know, big picture on that topic, and like I say, we'll come back to it here in a few more minutes. I think, you know, people might be shocked, but again, nobody is surprised when we see terror attacks like this on American soil. Look at the ways that they have caused all this chaos in America under the current Biden regime.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you do sort of worry that a lot of these kind of known wolves, as it were, who've been coming over the border, we know for a while because it's been open, but may have been sitting while Biden was in office, may get activated under Trump now to cause problems. And again, you know, I think the point is just to, I mean, I hate to even give any real credence to the stuff the left says on this, but the left, you know, that they're sitting there, they were actually running things and saying, it's, you know, it's white supremacist terrorism that's the number one threat. But you know, look, you're always going to get an occasional lone wolf attached to some strange personal ideology or some strange, you know, or some unfortunate kind of mental breakdown that they might have that might do something. I mean, that can happen. We just had this thing down in Vegas, and that may be true. I mean, we'll see, but it looks like that may involve, you know, a Special Forces soldier. So you can get that. But the difference here and what makes it much more dangerous is it's pretty clear that you have a number of people coordinating in an organized fashion, and they're very sane and they're very evil, and they are determined to cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that here in just a few minutes, because yeah, I think you nailed it. This whole idea that, well, this even this radical Islamic terrorism can be homegrown, I thought that Stephen Miller had a great response to that. So we'll talk about that here in just a second. All right. So I was looking at, you know, here we are kicking off the new year. This is our first live show in 2025 in the new year. And, you know, I got to enjoy a few days off, you know, around Christmas and into New Year's, thanks to our great guest hosts like David Noble and Scott Aspenlighter and Jake Eaton for covering down for me. And so I thought, man, this whole H-1B visa debate was a big debate there before the new year, and it really divided Trump supporters. I mean, you had Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, going all out in defense of H-1B visas. But then you had a lot of folks in the Trump circle also saying, wait a minute, this has gone way too out of hand. There's way too many of these H-1B visas. And so anyway, it was a big debate during the break. But you actually did a write-up that kind of went a little viral on this very topic.
Yeah, and I was sort of, I mean, my position is pretty clear, particularly in terms of how that visa program is being used right now, that we need to basically either shut it down or dramatically reduce its scope and reform it. But at the same time, you know, look, I've lived in Silicon Valley in the past. I'm a former tech guy. Like, I understand why Elon and Vivek and these folks are pushing for these sorts of visas that at least they would view as high-skilled immigration and don't want to give it up. But, you know, I also thought it was sort of funny. I was kind of talking with folks is that, you know, a bunch of people are freaking out. Meanwhile, Elon is endorsing the alternative for Deutschland in Germany. He's talking about these horrible rape gangs in Rotherham, UK that are very racially targeted and, you know, doing other things and saying free Tommy Robinson in the UK. And again, these things may not be kind of common knowledge to kind of a lot of American audiences, but these are kind of groups that have been really, really targeted by the global left because they've sort of talked about, you know, things that the left doesn't really want to talk about as far as race and immigration and national identity. And Elon is sitting out here as no kind of leader has done and really actively supporting them. But people really are freaking out because he says, you know, hey, as a tech guy, I'd like to make sure I can get the really high-skilled engineers in. And so I actually thought it was a really helpful debate to have early on, and I think we'll ultimately end up in a place that everybody can live with. I'm most concerned about getting rid of the millions and millions of illegals that we have in the country, and that's a number that really dwarfs the number of legal H-1Bs that we have. have.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The big picture is, okay, this was a good debate to have. This was a healthy debate to have because we've obviously got to reform even the H-1B visa system. We've got to look at reforming our legal immigration system. Clearly, I think everybody would agree. Now, we might disagree on why it needs to be reformed. The Democrats would want just more legal immigration. That's why they want to call all these legal illegals legal. But clearly, we need reforms. But first and foremost, we've got to look at the 50-meter targets first, which is the massive, over 10 million illegal aliens that have flooded this country in the past few years. That's got to be first and foremost the priority. But yes, eventually we need to have a debate about, okay, I understand H-1B visas are important not just to the tech sector, but also to a lot of farmers out there that need farm workers,
right.
Legal farm workers. Somebody, I forget who told me this, but they said they even said that Big Sky Montana couldn't be up and running this ski season if it wasn't for different visa programs that allow them to bring in workers from other countries, European countries, et cetera.
Yeah, and I do see that. And where I, as kind of a longtime immigration restrictionist, sort of push back is I say, well, look, you know, at a certain, if you're going to pay these guys low enough, yeah, you're not going to be able to get some local guy, especially for what might be a seasonal job. But what the answer to that is to actually pay more. And I can tell you, having been down to Big Sky and the Yellowstone Club, those guys are not starving so much that they couldn't pay a little bit more to Montana workers. And I think that would be a welcome thing all around. But look, you know, I get that there's a variety of opinions on that within our coalition. And I think the good news is there are massive areas of overlap here on the millions of illegals, on reducing the number of unskilled legal immigrants that we're putting in. And let's do all that. And then we can kind of have a healthy, I think once we do that and build the trust, and this is what I pointed out, both in my post on X and in my Substack, The Course of Empire, which folks can certainly go read my thoughts at greater length on it, is that once we kind of build that trust on some of these other immigration issues, then I think we can find a way forward on kind of some of these legal immigration issues.
Yeah, so for folks who aren't too familiar with this debate that took place over the past couple of weeks, the H-1B visas, the argument from the Elon Musk and the Vivek Ramaswamy's of the world is like, hey, this is how America wins. It's no different than the NBA, where they bring in the top basketball player from whatever Eastern European country, that you bring in the top 1% to round out your team so that America has the winning team. The problem is it's morphed into something way beyond that, where it really seems like they're bringing in a bunch of workers to displace American workers.
Right. Well, and it doesn't just look like that. That's what it is, and that's what it's been for a long time. And we do, I mean, again, I don't want to get too into the weeds here for your listeners on all the details, but we do actually have a visa called the O-1, and even that gets abused. But that, in theory, is the sort of visa that does the thing that Elon is talking about. I mean, it's kind of colloquially sometimes referred to as a genius visa, but yeah, that's for really bringing in really top talent. But look, I mean, we do bring in some talented folks with the H-1B visa. I'm not saying that we don't, but if you look at it, and this was kind of, these were coming out on X when people were having the debate, but there's clearly a huge number of people who are just very, very mid-level sort of software developers at best, or not even software developers, who are displacing American workers. And so that's, you know, it's really hard to justify, I think, for anybody who's arguing in good faith. So, you know, I think we can work out something for the really top talent, but we need to be honest about where we are.
Let's see, we've got just about less than a minute before our next break, but you wrote a response to Vivek Ramaswamy, why Silicon Valley is not the best model for America. We'll talk about that after the break. But real quickly, your book, The Unprotected Class, How Anti-White Racism is Tearing America Apart. Apparently, you've been cited by, a couple of federal judges now in their opinions. They've read your book and used your book to justify some of their decisions.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I've been cited or been informed at least 3 times by appeals court judges, by folks who know appeals court judges, that they've been reading my book. And I just recently had this citation by James Ho, who is a very prominent judge on the Fifth Circuit, who is often mentioned as a potential Trump Supreme Court nominee. And so that's great. I mean, that's why if you're a writer, you write books to hope that policymakers will read them. So,
combating the anti-white racism and now getting the attention of federal judges. Great job. All right, hold that thought. Back after this.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
They're trying to Trump-proof the DOJ by putting in all these late-minute hires. You know, they have now come out of hiding to thank their donors, urging Democrats to fight on. Our spirit is not defeated. We are not defeated. We are strong. We are clear about why we are in this, Harris told people as she's planning to run for California governor. But in the meantime, Joe Biden is selling off the parts of the wall that they inherited from the Trump administration, knowing that Donald Trump is about to begin the process of finishing that wall. So they're going to sell it all for pennies on the dollars, thinking that, you know, they're hurting Trump when they're really hurting the American people, because we're going to have to buy new parts when these parts, I'm sure, would be perfectly fine to use.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
All right, ready for a home upgrade without the hassle? Well, give your home a fresh look in 2025 with new custom window treatments thanks to our friends at Blinds.com, where real design experts make the complex. They make it very simple. Now, if you have a complicated project, no problem. Blinds.com, they will make it simple, fast, and easy. Schedule a free professional measure for you as well. Now, think you need a designer to visit your home? You don't. Now, shop from the comfort of your home on your schedule. They'll even send free samples right to your door. There's no question that shopping online will save you time and money, and something we could all use a little bit more of, especially with the new year upon us. And since Blinds is so affordable, well, you can change the look of your home for a great price. Blinds.com has covered over 25 plus million windows, all backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Now shop Blinds.com right now. Save up to 40% off on select styles. Plus you get a free professional measure, up to 40% off, limited time, Blinds.com. Okay. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are going to take you into January of 2025 with some great content, great guests, great hosts, and of course, your phone calls. David Noble will be in the house. Scott Aspenlighter in the house as well. So stay tuned to Montana Talks right here on your favorite radio station on through 2024, right into 2025 with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk and be heard all across Montana.
Put a frog in boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As veterans, we tell ourselves the lie that we can handle anything. We let the water boil. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the
406-201-6263, 406-201-6263. That's QC Kinetics, 406-201-6263.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're going to talk more about the New Orleans terror attack and likely a terror attack in Las Vegas as well. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour of the show as Jeremy Carl sticks with us for a few more minutes. Plus, Gary Marbit with the Montana Shooting Sports Association. And then Cameron Moylan out of Butte, Montana. Wait till you hear that conversation. That's going to be a great conversation coming up in the 9 o'clock hour of the show. Jeremy, before we talk more about the New Orleans terror attack, you drafted a response to be Vivek Ramaswamy, why Silicon Valley is not the best model for America. How would you kind of sum up your response? Because I understand it went a little viral.
Yeah, it got a lot of attention. In fact, I'm doing a national interview on it in just a couple hours from somebody who saw it. But, I think it was basically simply, look, America is a country, not an office park, and we've got an identity that we can actually also look. And again, I had lived in Silicon Valley for a time when I was at Stanford, and so I sort of saw what that looked like. And what actually happened is, yeah, I mean, we have a lot of economic growth because of some of these folks who got in, but the people who have built Silicon Valley, who'd been living there, they moved out. And again, that's not just me being anecdotal. I have a bunch of numbers. I talk about this in The Unprotected Class, my book. I kind of say, well, look, is this really the model that we want? And then also, of course, there is a lot of anti-white discrimination that goes on in the Valley. And it's interesting that since this is come out. I mean, it's my Twitter feed has been flooded with people giving examples of this far beyond what I put in my book, and it was sort of something that almost people weren't really talking about it, and now some even prominent people, including even super prominent venture capitalists in the Valley, are talking about it. And so the question is that really the kind of path that we want to go down as a country? And so that was really the point of my post.
So the basic response is that, okay, are they using the H-1B visas to bring in, you know, send kind of the elite 1% to help make America the winning team when it comes to technology or the space race or quantum technology, you name it, right? Yes, they are, but it seems like it's being abused so much right now that they're filling up the $70,000 a year, $80,000 a year jobs by bringing in a bunch of people from other countries. And so now, your computer science or your engineering students, maybe even from here in Montana, they don't get the opportunities that they otherwise would have gotten because of the abuse of that program.
Exactly. And that's part of it. And the other part that was a little bit, It kind of occasionally surfaced, explicit, was often implicit about H-1Bs, and it's sensitive, and I kind of feel like rhetoric on both sides sometimes was not particularly helpful, but due to the various ways that this is structured, functionally, like 85% of these guys, I'm literally not even exaggerating, are coming from one country, India. So, certainly there's a lot of Indians, and there's a lot of Indian software engineers, but that is not, I mean, there's like 4,000 coming from Europe and 350,000 coming from India in a year, right? So that does not represent a global talent search. It represents kind of focusing a lot on one country or secondarily China, which is the second place country, has like 30 or 40,000. And the question is, why do that if we're really claiming to be getting the best and the brightest globally? So there's a lot of problems with that program. And the good thing is we now surface those to a lot of our voters who probably hadn't thought about those before. And I think anything that we do with this program going forward is going to be a little smarter and more thoughtful than where we were.
But, and wasn't there also, to a certain extent, a debate of, well, see, these workers that come from India, they're just more disciplined and they study harder. And, you Americans, you're just a wild bunch. But it's kind of the wild side, the rough and tumbleness of being an American that also leads to more ingenuity and things like that, right? About 30 seconds to go here before we run out of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned this in my piece, actually, and it's at jeremycarl.substack.com. That if you look at, in fact, the great tech entrepreneurs, they weren't kind of just a grind nerd who was sitting, giving straight A's all the time. It was Stephen Jobs, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, the Sergey Brin. And
some of them that never even went to college. Yeah. Hold that thought. All right. Quick break.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Let's think outside the box for a minute about the future of transportation. 40,000 people die in vehicle crashes every year. Suppose we could cut that drastically. How? Driverless cars. Imagine for one moment a world where crashes were avoided. What would that mean? It would mean that we could have different kinds of vehicles. Smaller, lighter, more efficient, cheaper, more aerodynamic. We don't need airbags and huge bumpers. Lower fuel costs and lower insurance rates. The cheapest ones might be repaired the way we fix computers today, by replacing them with new ones. Lighter vehicles would cause less wear and tear on roads. We could use the same roads, garages, and parking lots we have today, but they could serve a lot more volume. Is this really so far-fetched? There are plenty of details to be worked out, like how we move things like freight and big families. Things like buses and commuter trains might become dinosaurs, but getting people to accept it might be easier than you think, especially if it costs a fraction of what we pay today. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.